Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm with a live link at thetrumpet.com. Lots to talk about in today's program. How would you like to go shopping in a grocery store where nobody worked there? You could just take what you wanted. There's a new one coming out, and it works just that way. We'll have the details. Some other interesting headlines, including Time Magazine's Person of the Year for 2016. Take a guess at who that might be. We'll have details about that. And have you ever made a bad first impression? Here's how to work on the second impression. That and more in this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. This is Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well for you. You can listen on the TuneIn app as well. It's a great place to listen. Check us out when you're on the go. And I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. And Grant, when you came in, I said, hey, Grant, how you doing? And is it cold outside? And you revealed one of your superpowers. The weather has no effect on your body, you say.
It doesn't. Well, at least on my mind. I don't really think about it. That's just probably what it is.
Don't think about the temperatures.
Yeah.
We're going to test that. We'll see if it gets really cold. I'll have you go out there and we'll just have you broadcast live from outside. We'll see how you do as the day goes on.
There apparently is a guy who has some sort of a weather superpower where he's able to go shirtless in subarctic temperatures. And I think he goes into like ice holes in the and just gets in the water. So
there is, well, I've heard of examples of people that have had something happen to them. I think the one example I heard, and I can't verify it, but I'll assume it's true, is somebody got hit by lightning at some point, and they lost their ability to feel temperature. So in a way, I mean, you'd have to be careful because it'll still harm you if it's extreme. You just don't feel it. And he would shovel snow, you know, with no shirt on, that type of thing. That's like everybody that watches a Packer game in Lambeau Field. There's no shirts on. But there is a sport, and the guy that's doing it, he's trying to make it an Olympic sport. There's kind of a neat video on CNN about it where it is ice swimming, and they go up and they cut the ice out. They have to swim, I think it's a kilometer, and they have to do it, and they have to complete it, and that's the goal. But it is really, really dangerous. They have, you know, emergency medical people there on the scene. Because your body's not designed for that. And sometimes people don't finish. Sometimes they do. Even when they do finish, they say there's a period of recuperation afterwards that is very bad. Like your body's kind of coming back to itself. And it's weird. It's a weird mindset because they hate it. It's excruciating, but they love it at the same time. And there's a few people that do this. And they just go to different places around the world and do this swim. And the main guy is trying to make it an Olympic sport. Winter Olympics, I would assume.
My brother and I actually did a kind of a polar plunge during a winter camp out a couple years ago, and that's exactly right. I had to get 10 layers on and stay in bed for a few hours after that.
It can be dangerous, but people do it. I know up north in Wisconsin, there would always be a few that would do the polar bear club thing. They wouldn't swim much of a distance. They'd just jump in and then jump back out.
Right.
And from what I recall, a lot of them did have a little extra layer, if you know what I mean, even with their shirts off. They were insulated. Chicago had a record snowfall this year already. The first snowfall to hit Illinois this fall, they say, was no polite dusting, but it was a record-breaking event. They say it was the biggest first-of-the-season daily total for Chicago at O'Hara Airport. They had 6.4 inches. So a lot of times your first snow is that little dusting, and everyone says, oh, it's snowing. But this was serious, half a foot. And the previous record was 4.8 inches. That was in November of 1940. And the hardest hit area was near the Quad Cities, some areas recording more than 9 inches. So that is a rude welcome to winter.
Yeah, that's almost trapping people inside their homes, probably.
It's always fun the first one of the year. You know, it's exciting. But then after it just keeps coming, you're like, all right, enough's enough. Not down here in Oklahoma. I mean, we get snow. It's a big event.
Yeah, it is. We get some pretty violent blizzards sometimes, at least for what I'm accustomed to.
The wind, right, and then the ice is always the one of the bigger issues that happens sometimes. So winter is definitely here, and the temperatures are dropping. And what happens when the winter cold comes and the temperatures drop and it gets more windy and cold? Your lips get really chapped.
I'm starting to feel that.
Everybody, that's your one weakness to your superpower is to chap lips. No idea what the temperature is, but based upon my lips.
I know it's dry outside from that.
That's right. It dries up in the winter here, probably most places, but here especially with the wind. You get that powerful shock when you touch things, your car door. And you need, like we said yesterday, hands get dry and lips get chapped. So if you've got chapped lips, here's a couple of basic tips how to help that. They say use a lip balm, obviously, 5 or 6 to 8 times per day if necessary. But you don't want to cake it on too much where you get that shiny lip thing going on.
Yeah, if you're a man, you don't want that, that's for sure.
I don't.
My wife always cakes it on. I'm like, maybe you like the shiny lip look.
It's not for me. They say, and this is a big one for kids especially, stop licking your lips. It's so hard to do that. But they say you're just washing off the protective oils that keep your lips moist in the first place.
Wow.
So you know how it is. It kind of feels nice initially, and then it burns. Every little kid goes through that. Especially they lick their upper lip, and you see it start to get red. And I always look, and I think, I remember that first grade. I had the same problem.
Well, yeah, the lip gets, it looks like it's twice as big because there's a big red line on top of the upper lip whenever people start licking it.
Gotta just leave it alone, but it is hard to do, especially when you're younger. They say beware of people, if you're allergic, you have to be aware to some lip balm. Sometimes people have a reaction to like the fragrance, the flavor, or the preservative that's in there. I'm not sure exactly what would happen, but I guess you'd know something bad's happening here. Don't use those. I do occasionally put on some chapstick or whatever. I don't think I own any personally. It's always my wife's, and it always smells like strawberries or some sort of fruit. And I think, what's that smell? Oh, that's me. I smell very fruity today.
Yeah, we would never think to buy chapstick on our own.
No.
I don't think I've ever bought it for myself.
No, I wouldn't have chapstick or any sort of lotion, I don't think, at all.
Yeah.
Just don't think about it. Another thing that you can do, and this is a good idea, they say, is to try using a humidifier at night in your house. It gets dry. If you have heat going, it just dries it even more. And if you have a humidifier, that can help for a little bit. Because in the winter, I know, I wake up sometimes a little bit of a stuffy nose, just from the dryness, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So humidifier is a good idea if you can do that. And then finally, just stay out of the wind or cover your mouth when you're outside, which is big here. Put a scarf on or something. Cover that face.
Yeah, that's a good point. And if you get cold easily, put a hat on because that's where the heat will leave you.
Yes, it does. It definitely does. That helps keep you warm. So those are just some tips. Pretty obvious, I guess, but in some cases a good reminder about what to do if you've got the chapped lips in the wintertime. Our friend Tim Tebow, not that we know him personally, but we'll call him our friend.
We don't?
Well, I don't. Maybe. I don't know what you do, but... everybody remembers him, I think, from his days at Florida University, and then he played in the NFL for a while, and kind of a lightning rod, I guess, for publicity, because he considers himself Christian in some fashion, and talks about religion. And, well, anyway, he's trying out for the major leagues, and people kind of laughed at him, but the Mets manager, Terry Collins, says he wants Tim Tebow playing games in spring training, so we're going to see more Tebow in spring training.
He has some skills. I don't know if it's major league level, but he can do some things.
Absolutely. I know he wasn't the prototypical NFL quarterback, but, I mean, he won the Heisman, right? He won 2 championships at Florida. You don't do that by being not good at sports.
Exactly.
So, Terry Collins, the Mets manager, said, look, he's the ultimate teammate, and he's won everywhere he's been. And that's true. I mean, even with the Broncos, he won. He won ugly, but they did win. And I have to tell you, you know, the NFL's... they're worried about their ratings dropping. You know, when he played, I always watched. I just kept, what is he going to do? Like, he'd play horrible, and then somehow at the end, they'd pull it out. And it was great entertainment.
Yeah, even in the playoffs, I believe he shocked the Steelers in that one game where it just seemed like they had no chance.
Yeah, I totally remember that. I think it was overtime, and he hit one of his receivers in some sort of a crossing route, and he went all the way to the end zone. And he's just like, no way, Tim Tebow? Like, how is this possible? But, I mean, he'll throw all the passes 8 miles over the guy's head, and then he hits a good one. You know, he would throw the ball, and you'd wonder, did he throw that away, or did he just miss? Like, that's how inaccurate he was. I remember him throwing a pass that went into the stands, and I thought, was he throwing it away, or did he just miss the guy?
It's not a good sign if you don't know for sure what he's trying to do there.
No, but he was a winner. You know, if baseball doesn't work out for him, I know the ultimate thing for him, mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
Can you imagine him? Everybody would watch. He'd be in there fighting the guy and encouraging him at the same time.
Yeah. He'd be like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
He'd be choking him out and like, well, hang in there, buddy. Don't give up.
He probably looks like a superhero, too. I mean, I've never seen him shirtless. I'm not going to speculate too much. But
oh, yeah.
I'm sure he looks like he could be pretty intimidating.
He's a big guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. Strong. I forget what he weighs, 250, 60. Like, and that's what made him sort of effective as a running quarterback. You couldn't really take him down with just a quick little hit. You had to really take him down because he's so big. So, yeah, he's a big guy, no doubt. So, anyway, we'll see what happens with Tim Tebow there in spring training. And if it doesn't work out, MMA. I'm telling you, you'd sell that out.
Seriously, it would sell a lot. And that's one of those sports where it is based on who's watching. Like the NBA, you get paid no matter what. Most sports, you get paid no matter how many people show up to watch you. But in fighting sports, people have to actually watch or else you don't get paid as much. So it's actually really important who comes in there.
Yeah, for sure. Donald Trump is making a lot of headlines. We've got some stories about him later today in the show, but he made a headline with his tweeting yesterday, I guess, again. And this headline says, Boeing responds after Trump knocks contract for Air Force One jets. Did you see that? He said, look, it's too expensive. Mm-hmm. We'll cancel the order.
Right.
So that's what he said yesterday, Tuesday. He said the Air Force should cancel its contract with Boeing to build two new presidential airplanes, asserting that the agreement had a $4 billion price tag. And what he said, what he tweeted was, Boeing is building a brand new 747 Air Force One for future presidents, but costs are out of control, more than $4 billion. Cancel the order, exclamation point. Well, you got to say he's transparent, if nothing else. At least he tells us what he's thinking. So Boeing responded and they said, well, we're only under contract for $170 million to determine the capabilities of the new aircraft. So I would imagine that's the actual cost would be pretty high if it's $170 million just to determine the capabilities.
Right, just to research the capabilities. And apparently a lot of different stories came out attacking what Mr. Trump said there, but then they had to put little parts in the story later on that said, well, actually, they have already spent over $2 billion, and by the time it's done, it'll probably be more than $4 billion. So once again, the media jumps on him at the outset and then has to kind of backtrack once people figure out that it's not true.
Yeah, Mr. Trump said that they want Boeing to make money, just not that much money, which is a fair point. I don't know a lot about aircrafts and what they cost to build. I'm sure they're not cheap. But anytime there's a government-funded project, it seems like there's a lot of waste and way overspending. There's been a lot of stories about that. I think the Trumpet Hour talked about that a few months ago. You know, just some of the ridiculous amounts of money, because I think they know, like, this is kind of free money for us. Mm-hmm. They don't care. We could kind of up the, you know, what we're spending on it. There was a story even yesterday about the Pentagon, how much money they've wasted, and they kind of buried all that.
$125 billion, and they buried the report so people wouldn't see that they were wasting a lot on military spending.
Right. So not that it's bad to spend the money if you need to, but again, it's probably somewhat wasteful. So yeah. I kind of appreciate the fact that he'd come out and say, well, that's too much. We don't need to spend that.
Right, and it's $4 billion for a plane that's going to transport the president. I don't think that's a fully equipped military plane. I'm pretty sure it's surrounded by other planes in the sky, right, whenever it flies. So if it doesn't have big guns on it, why is it costing $4 billion just for one plane?
Wi-Fi? No, I don't know.
Some expensive Wi-Fi.
I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff in there, but I don't know much about it. But anyway, interesting to see him coming out and saying that. It's kind of funny talking about airplanes and presidents flying, and which is fair enough. They need their own plane to get around. But that kind of runs into the argument of the global warming, you know, and that's always what they talk about. People are upset with global warming, so they go to a climate conference and they all fly their private jets there. Just stay home, do a FaceTime, and you save all the money and the pollution. But I just saw today that Paris has their worst air pollution in like a long time. Mm-hmm. So that's where they had the climate summit.
That's right. That's kind of a bad sign for them to say that they care about the climate so much, and yet their own record is abysmal.
Yeah, and I guess maybe they'd say that's why we need to make some changes. I don't know, but
yeah, you could just argue that in circles all day, it seems like.
I thought in Paris they only drove Vespas. How do those pollute?
I don't know.
Is that a stereotype? There's a funny story that I didn't have it in my notes, but it's just funny. I want to bring it up. there's this guy in New Zealand. He's an Asian man, and he went to get a passport, and it was the machine. You have to go there and they take your picture and everything, and it wouldn't give him the passport, and it said it was because his eyes were closed.
Oh.
Well, they're not, but he just obviously, the Asian face has a little bit different eye structure. And so he had some good humor about it, but they were saying it was a racist robot.
Oh, it would, come on.
So the fellow trying to get the passport, he did one of those funny pictures where you manipulate your face, and he made his eyes huge. He's like, is this going to be good enough for you? He was laughing about it. I thought it was pretty funny.
That's the way to respond. Just have a sense of humor. Don't call a robot racist. Yeah. That's actually how we respond now. Is everything is racist? Machines are racist somehow. Different laws are racist. That's not how it works.
No. It was just kind of a humorous story that can happen sometimes. And it's frustrating. Sometimes you're trying to do something with a machine. I have this at the self checkout at the grocery store. Where, it's confused. And I'm like, but I did put it in the bag. And they're saying, something's there. It shouldn't be there. And the lady has to come over and help me like 8 times. She could have just checked me out and we would have been done.
Exactly.
The robot had a problem with me and didn't let me check out.
I avoid self-checkout every time. Speaking of passports, remember that story that you had about your driver's license photo and
yes.
how you didn't like it?
Yes.
And that wasn't even a robot. That was just a person who didn't want to retake the picture for you.
Yeah, she just didn't care. She was apathetic.
Weren't you like, I look terrible in this picture. She's like, okay.
I tried to kind of make a joke about it. I said, well, this is going to be my mugshot. Take a look at this thing, And she's like, yep. There was no one behind me. No one was waiting. Just retake the photo.
It's like $40 for a driver's license, and they can't even bother to take a second picture.
It looked terrible. It still does look terrible, as a matter of fact. But, yeah, she didn't want to help me out there. So, anyway, whether it's a robot or a person, you can deal with some of that.
And we can always blame it on racism.
She didn't like me. She was a white woman. I was a white male. She didn't,
It's still racism.
Sexism.
Doesn't matter.
Sexism. Yeah. She didn't like me. And I was younger than her, so it was...
Ageism.
Yeah.
There's always a reason to be offended.
Always. You can always find something. But, by the way, in the Trumpet Hour program today, which is coming up here in a bit on KPCG, one of the topics is how to never be offended. So that's a really good one, because it is very easy to get offended over all kinds of things.
Exactly. Yeah. Be a lawkeeper. Is that a spoiler?
A little bit, but it gets a little more practical in certain ways. So make sure you listen for that. And if you can't catch the replay, you can always get it online at kpcg.fm. We have the archives posted there as well. Grant, have you ever made a bad first impression anywhere?
Never once.
Wow. You're the one guy that hasn't. It's easy to do, make a bad first impression, and second and third and fourth. And so this is kind of an interesting little write-up here. It says, if you've made a bad first impression, what can you do to try to remedy that situation? And they give 3 basic places where this can happen. At work, they say if several of your colleagues are throwing shade, which is, by the way, a new expression, meaning they're not happy with you, I guess. It's not part of my regular vocabulary, but apparently that's what the kids are saying.
Right. And
throwing shade.
I keep trying to figure out why shade is the preferred word there, but it doesn't really make sense to me either.
I like the shade when it's hot outside and I'm in the sun. So somebody throw some shade at me. Clouds are always throwing shade. It says
the clouds are haters.
Why are they throwing shade at me? They say leadership and cultural transformation expert. That's an interesting title. Mac Story suggests figuring out what you did to cause it. If everyone in your workplace believes you react badly to criticism, for example, there might be some truth to it. Try to address the issue. Your coworkers will respect the effort and stop reducing your personality to a work-related flaw. So I guess you have to, it depends on your personal situation. That might be good to try to address it. It can happen in the workplace. You have to be somewhat careful, I think.
It could be a little bit awkward staging an office intervention for yourself.
Yeah. Especially if no one really thinks that, if you're overreacting and you're like, everybody thinks this about me. And
it's all just paranoia.
Yeah,
just
paranoid. So be careful that you're not being paranoid. They say you can have some bad first impressions at your in-laws. That can happen. They say if your in-laws still think you're not good enough for their baby. Human behavior specialist Shelley Chosak says your options are slim. Either you just live with it or you act in a way that works for them. In other words, if they like humor, try to tell some jokes. But only if you're funny, I would say. If you're not, I wouldn't do that. If they like silence, keep quiet. How much integrity you're willing to sacrifice to keep your in-laws happy is up to you. Kind of interesting. I mean, I think there might be a point there. Just try to get along. Mm-hmm. Get along best you can.
Yeah, just be a different person if you have to, just to get along.
Yeah, some people don't. Some people are a little quieter, and they don't appreciate you just yammering on. So don't yammer on, I guess.
Yeah, that's just about being all things to all men. That doesn't mean you have to necessarily fake or lie your way through it, but just adjust.
Yeah, you don't have to invent a fake personality, but maybe sometimes just to turn the volume down or up, depending on what they like. And then they say, finally, at that place you did the dumb thing. Which could be a lot of places. Remember that place you did that dumb thing? Be like, let me check my day planner. There's been a few of those. If you've ever made a fool of yourself and thought, I can never show my face here again, don't panic. They say, next time act like nothing happened. That's true. That's a good point.
That's tough, though. That's tough to apply.
It's a rule in media that I was taught growing up and when I was working early on. They said, if you make a mistake, just move on.
Do you not even address it?
Don't even address
it. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, unless it was like some sort of huge factual error and, you know, that might need to be corrected. But, you know, if you're like a television or something and you come on the air and they make a mistake, they don't play the right video, you just move on. You say, wrong video. And you don't come back, you know, the next day and be like, hey, you guys remember yesterday when we, because in a lot of cases people don't remember or they just turned it on. They weren't watching. And there's no reason to bring it up again. I think that's the same in life. You don't have to keep bringing up the dumb thing you did at the place.
Right. Yeah, actually, I've actually noticed that a lot on TV where the wrong headline will be at the bottom of the screen. And obviously the anchor doesn't want to just call out the video people. That would make for a bad work relationship as well.
Yeah, it can be tense. I was a director for a while for a morning news show. And when I first started, it's a little rough. You know, you got to get your feet wet. And the lady was also the main anchor. She was quitting smoking at the time. So she was not a happy camper. And if looks could kill, I had a few of those where something went wrong and then the video's playing. So they're not live on the air at that point. But they look at the camera because they know you can see them. And they just give you that, like, you know, what are you doing back there sort of thing.
You should just flick her back onto live TV while she's scowling at you.
Well, I tell you what, there is always it's always an interesting love-hate relationship between, like, what would be considered the news department, the reporters, the people on air, and the people in the back room that are making everything happen. There's an interesting dynamic there. And you do want to try to get along because if you want a successful product, you have to get along and work together.
That's for sure.
And sometimes, you know, person gets a reputation. The anchors always had the reputation for being prima donnas and, you know, they thought they were too good for everybody and that type of thing. And
I feel like that comes across a lot on TV too. They try to hide it when they actually go live, but a lot of these people seem like they're the big stars, especially when you hear how much they get paid. They get paid like $20 million a year on some of these big networks.
Oh, the big ones, yeah.
Can you imagine someone in the back room making that much, even though they're probably doing a harder job?
Yeah, no, for sure. It's interesting. Both jobs have different stresses, for sure. You know, grocery stores, we were talking about those just a little bit ago. There is a new grocery store that Amazon is trying. Amazon's kind of the innovator of a lot of things here lately. Amazon Go pioneers grocery shopping without checkout lines or cashier jobs. No checkout lines, no cashiers. You walk in, you walk out with what you want. How does this happen? How is this possible? Amazon Go is already open to Amazon employees. Amazon Go is the name of the store. Already open to Amazon employees through its beta program, or they're testing it, and it's scheduled to open to the public in early 2017. So in some cities, I don't know the list of cities, you might be able to go to this store. They've released a video kind of explaining how it happens. Shoppers scan a code from the Amazon Go app on their smartphone at a kiosk and then proceed to fill up their carts. The cart then kind of determines what you have, I guess. They take they use some of this different technology. It's a virtual cart, automatically registers every time a customer picks up or puts down an item, and Amazon accounts are only charged once someone leaves the store. So I'm not totally sure how they would determine it, but there's a way that they can tell what you put in your cart, what you left the store with, and then you get your bill.
Wow.
So in some ways, I think it could be pretty neat. They say they're using computer vision, deep learning algorithms, and sensor fusion, you know, all those things we like to use, much like you'd find in self-driving cars. Well, those haven't been that successful. They call it just walkout technology. So that's the new thing. And they say it's going to be ready to go pretty soon. They're going to have breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks. You can go get whatever you want. And it's going to put some people out of work. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, that's a... Actually, now that you put it that way, it doesn't sound so great at all.
Well, it's interesting. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that there are currently 3,478,420, exactly, cashiers in the U.S., and they earn an hourly wage of about $10.09 per hour. So, I don't know. I kind of feel like if this technology worked well, it might make life easier. I don't know. And maybe those people could transition into another function. I mean, there still have to be people in the store, I would think, to stock shelves or just to be on standby. You know, hey, could you help me with this or explain this to me? And clearly the technology is going to mess up occasionally.
Right.
And they're going to have to do that. So, I don't know. I always feel like, well, if a job isn't needed, I don't know. Why would you keep it around? You just find something else if you can.
Well, definitely. As the owner of a business, why would you keep around employees who could be expendable? That's the tough part of it. But at the same time, it raises crazy ideas like up in Canada where they decided in a certain town they would give everyone $20,000 a year because they figured people are being phased out of their jobs anyway, so why not just give people the money and let them sit around and the robots can do all the jobs. It's like some sort of dystopian type of future where people have all this free time on their hands. Who knows what they're going to do with that free time and all that free money?
Yeah, and it's interesting. They mentioned that it's a similar technology to the self-driving cars. I mean, can you imagine a self-driving semi bringing all the food? And then I guess you could have robots unloading it. And then, I mean, really, you could almost have nobody work there at a point, at some point, except for a few people.
That's probably the end goal
at
a lot of those places.
And I think it's interesting, too. It'd be easy to overspend. Just kind of walk in there and say, you know, I'll figure it out later. Just load in your cart with all this stuff.
That's why it's actually very smart for the business owners, because all you have to do is put the stuff in the cart, walk out. You don't have a cashier saying it's going to be $350, and you say, oh, I don't know if I can afford that. You just walk out and are oblivious to it almost.
Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see how this works and if they actually try it. I do envision like people stealing things. I don't know how exactly they would prevent that, but anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens. People, I don't know. And even if they get it started, it would probably take a while. I mean, even like say if you go to a lot of stores today, Target or wherever, they do have the self checkout like we mentioned. But I don't know. Sometimes I like it. Sometimes I don't. It depends on what I'm getting and how much I'm getting. And a lot of times I just go to the normal human.
Yeah. Every time it seems like every time I've tried a self-checkout line in the past, it just, I messed up something or it wouldn't read a certain barcode on one item or two, and it just took way longer. This Amazon store that's about to open up, though, it does make you wonder, what if someone doesn't have the Amazon Go app, they just grab the items and they leave? Then it's not tagged to any specific user, and so who gets charged for it? How hard would it be to steal?
Well, that's true, or if they hacked an app. You know, or somebody stole your phone or something. I mean, there are always potential for danger there. I don't know. Maybe they would do it like Sam's Club, you know, where you walk in and there's somebody there to kind of at least sort of look at what you're doing. You got to show them that you can come into the forbidden store and look at the giant bags of dog food.
Actually, at Sam's Club, my mom caught two guys stealing a huge television.
What?
They just walked right out like they owned the place.
Wow.
And then
she tackle him?
She was very afraid, so she called dad, and dad told her to just call the police, and then she turned them in.
Yeah.
I imagine those guys were caught on camera later on once the police knew what to look for.
People get bold sometimes, and there was a story even yesterday about, I think it was some teenagers that just drove into the storefront of an Apple store, just smashed the window with their vehicle, stole all the iPads, iPhones, just took off. So
is that what they call a flash mob? I believe that's been happening a lot, too, where like 10 or 15 people will come to the store at one time. They'll raid it. And if you have like two employees there, what are they going to do to stop it?
Yeah. And by the time they call the authorities, it's like, I don't know. You know, where did they go? Who were they? It's hard to tell. So maybe they catch them with the cameras. I'm not sure. But there was another story, too. I forgot to actually write it all down. But, you know, there's this mannequin thing people are doing where they all...
Mannequin challenge where they all freeze.
Yeah. They freeze and then they go around them with the camera. Well, some guys did this, and I think it was a pretty rough neighborhood, but they did it with their guns. Like, they all had their firearms out, and they did that. And the police were like, oh, thanks. And they just went and arrested them all for having illegal weapons. It's like, you can't put that. You see that sometimes.
Because they put themselves on video.
Yeah. People will do that. They'll steal something. They don't realize it's being tracked. because you can track a phone or computer or whatever, and then they like post themselves, pictures of themselves doing things, and people are like, well, that's where they are. You know, just go find them. They didn't think through the technology side of it, so that can happen. Of course, this next story happened. This is classic. This is like out of a movie. This is from Philadelphia. Motorist tried to run over her ex as he put up Christmas lights. State police say holiday music was blaring from a Western Pennsylvania woman's car as she tore up the yard of her ex-boyfriend's home, nearly running the man and his family over. 47-year-old Mary Jo Smith was charged Tuesday with multiple offenses stemming from Monday's incident. Alan McCutcheon says he was setting up a Christmas light display outside the Fayette County home when she yelled "Merry Christmas" and then drove across his lawn a bunch of times while blaring holiday music and almost ran him over and destroyed his yard.
Just talk about a way to win back your ex.
That was a bad impression.
That'll convince him.
I just have that vision, though, this lady yelling, you know, yelling whatever she yelled, "Merry Christmas" or something, and then burning across their lawn. Oh wow, it does highlight that that's not always as peaceful and loving as some people think it might be.
Right? Yeah, a lot of time it just turns to getting as many gifts as you can. So
it's just a crazy, crazy story. Oh boy, people do some strange things out there, and that'll make its way into a movie at some point if it hasn't yet. If I was a scriptwriter, I would just go through those type of headlines and be like, I've got our next movie, I think.
So many things, so many crazy things happen now that you don't even have to make it up for a movie. Just find it. It's happened.
Yeah, it's weirder. They say, you know, truth is stranger than fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That guy lugging that 86-pound bucket of gold down the street after just taking it out of a truck.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if they've caught that guy yet.
Probably not.
Somebody will get it, you know, later on for like a anniversary gift or something. Hey, got you something. And you're like, is this an 86-pound bucket of gold?
And they'll
flakes?
Get arrested. Yeah. They'll get caught with the contraband.
Yeah, it's really strange stories out there. The Keep It David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG, as well as Trumpet Daily Radio Show with Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. And today he takes a look back at the Worldwide Church of God and some of the history when they discontinued Mystery of the Ages, which is a free book that you can get at thetrumpet.com. There's a court battle there that ensued for a few years, and so it's a really interesting story. Also, the book Raising the Ruins chronicles a lot of what happened with that case and just that church in general, and so it's a really interesting history if you live through it, or if even if you don't know much about it, it's a really good introduction to what happened there. So make sure you listen for that Trumpet Daily Radio Show that's coming your way here in just a bit on KPCG, or you can get the archives online at kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today here on Trumpet Radio Live. You can follow us on Twitter at KPCGFM. Also, email us any comments, questions, stories, whatever you'd like to, at comments@kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk. Grant Turgeon and Abraham Blondeau is here today as well, stopping by. Hello.
Hello.
You know, you guys have some interesting stories to get to, but before we get to that, there's a list out. We're getting to the end of the calendar year here, so they come out with their different lists. And this is from Mediate. Most influential people in the media. They gave their top 25, and I just have the top five for you here. Number five, Sean Hannity of Fox News. Agree, disagree?
Yeah. I love that guy.
He was
he's fantastic.
He was pretty influential in the early part of the election.
Number four, this one surprises me because I think he should be higher, Matt Drudge, Drudge Report.
Wow.
Number two, not familiar with this name, but Carolyn Ryan of New York Times. She's a senior politics editor. Number two, Megyn Kelly, Fox News.
Okay.
Number one, and this is where it gets crazy, Jeff Zucker, CNN president. Now, I don't know a lot about Jeff Zucker, but what's interesting to me is in this top five list, which I don't, you know, it's somebody's opinion, you've got two anchors from Fox News. And then if you look at the conservative, more of the conservative side, you've got three out of the top five are conservative. And yet the guy that's over the very liberal CNN, he's number one. But if he was number one, wouldn't a lot of his anchors be in the top five? Wouldn't you have, like, who's on that network?
You have
Don Lemon.
Make lemonade if you got lemons.
Anderson Cooper. Wolf Blitzer.
Okay, yeah, that's right. The fact that I had to ask because I couldn't think off.
Brooke Baldwin, I think, is another one.
So you'd think they'd be in the...
They're not nearly as prominent, though, as the ones on Fox,
right.
I wouldn't think.
Because more people watch Fox, right?
Yeah.
Well, they have like twice the ratings as CNN. Why wouldn't the guy in charge of Fox be more powerful than the guy in charge of CNN?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes... Well, it is interesting to have a CEO, because they have like anchors, like an internet journalist, and then they have a CEO. So it's kind of a odd... Oh, and like a writer, a columnist on there. They have like a kind of an odd spectrum of different people they're comparing there. But I mean, I'm sure... He is influential, maybe not in the right way.
None of us made the list, by the way. But that it depends who you ask.
We must be in the top 30 list. That's just the top 25.
Yeah, it's only the top 25.
Yeah.
We've only been doing it for a year or two. It takes a while to build up the traction. So maybe next year. It'll be reflected in your bonuses. Or not reflected.
We would be paid quite handsomely if we were that popular.
People would be like, who's that now? What's that? So anyway, interesting. They always have these different lists. And it's opinion. I mean, it's hard to... But Drudge is the one that put the story up. And they had a question mark. Drudge number four? Come on now.
Well, no one knows what he looks like. I've never seen a picture of him before.
I've seen... Yeah, well, he kind of is a mystery figure in a way. Yeah. I've seen an interview with him, but he wouldn't allow himself to be on camera.
Oh, really?
Like, he sat off camera a little bit. And so, yeah, he keeps to himself. Now, I didn't look at the entire list. There's obviously 25. I just wonder, WikiLeaks? You know?
Julian Assange?
Yeah.
Alex Jones?
Alex Jones, I mean, yeah.
Alex Jones has the biggest radio program in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So,
you could put Donald Trump in there.
Yeah,
just because he tweets. Yeah. I mean, where do you break down the line between media and not media? Are you paid to do it? Maybe that's where you'd break that down. But I mean, if you've got a lot of Twitter followers, you kind of are the media.
Yeah,
yeah. They probably differentiate between social media and like media proper, I would imagine, because everyone's in the media, if you're on social media, in a sense, as you said, but they're probably just talking about like news media.
Yeah,
Bill O'Reilly should be ahead of Megyn Kelly too. He gets more viewers than she does.
Yeah, she's an interesting figure. They're talking about her maybe going to CNN even, and
yeah,
I don't know.
But
she's not very loyal to Fox, and Bill O'Reilly calls her out on that. It's pretty funny.
But Bill O'Reilly doesn't sell more calendars than Megyn Kelly.
He's got all those books like Killing Lincoln, Killing Jesus, a lot of other ones, Killing Kennedy.
Killing Patton, so Killing Reagan.
It's even beyond his TV show. It seems like he should have more influence than Megyn Kelly does.
She wrote a book about herself, didn't she?
Well, yeah. Yeah, a book about herself and accusing everyone else of misdeeds.
Yeah. We'll see. Sometimes this happens and it's happened in the past in media where somebody that is a well-known person, they jump ship and they go to a different place and they think, well, I'm big enough. I'll carry the viewership with me. It doesn't always work that way. Sometimes it can, but doesn't always. Bill Simmons, you know, he was kind of big and then he was on ESPN for a while and then left and he's not.
He went to HBO and I think that show has already been canceled.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people, you believe your own hype a little bit, like, oh, everybody likes me. Well, yeah, maybe, but if you're not on a platform people go to, I don't think they're going to follow you necessarily. Yeah. So.
Well, yeah, and Megyn Kelly's viewers are Fox viewers. They're not going to go to CNN just because she goes.
It'll be interesting.
A lot of Fox viewers don't like CNN at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if it has any questionable ethics comes up, because if she is on Fox, I don't know her background, but if she's on Fox because she believes in a more conservative mindset, but she goes to CNN, which is probably the most liberal news site out there. I don't know, just the question of ethics and how you report honestly when you're working for those different biases.
She could co-host a show with Rachel Maddow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's another one. She's on MSNBC, isn't she?
Beauty and the Beast.
CNN, yeah.
So they call the show?
Question mark.
Which is which, though, is the real question. I'm starting to wonder who is worse.
It's up to the viewers. I just give the titles. I don't know. Interesting article here, Abraham. Time Magazine, they unveiled their 2016 Person of the Year. And it is, drum roll,
Donald Trump.
There it is. He had this picture of him sitting in the chair looking very... prestigious, I guess.
Yes, yeah, very tough looking picture. Yeah, it's a monster article. Not as big as Jeffrey Goldberg's interview with President Obama, but it is one of the longer ones I've had to read through, and it is, I think, one of the more balanced articles I've read about Donald Trump too. So I think they do a good job with that, and I think if you look at all the candidates, he has to be man of the year or person of the year.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, as they explained in the article, I mean, he's fundamentally changed the world, and he's not even the president yet.
Yeah. I mean, he tweets, and the world shifts. That's a lot of power.
Yeah. Yeah, and they have a really great opening paragraph here. It's a couple pages into the interview, but I just think it captures how people think about Donald Trump or how unexpected he was. And it says, for nearly 17 months on the campaign trail, Trump did what no American politician had attempted in a generation, with defiant flair. Instead of painting a bright vision for a unified future, he magnified the divisions of the present, inspiring new levels of anger and fear within his country. Whatever you think of the man, this much is undeniable. He uncovered an opportunity others didn't believe existed, the last greatest deal for the 21st century salesman. The national press, the late-night comics, the elected leaders, the donors, the corporate chiefs, and a sitting president who prematurely dropped his mic, they all believed he was just taking the country for a ride.
Yeah, well, and that's a really good point that they bring out, because there's a lot of issues in the country that I think most politicians didn't want to talk about, because it becomes pretty heated. And he went right for him. I mean, he hit all those big ones. Not that he gave any big solutions, but he at least addressed that it's a problem. And in the current politically correct climate, just even addressing the problem is refreshing. Like saying, yeah, there's terrorism, and yeah, there's radical Islam, and yeah, this and this and this, and just even saying it and calling it what it was really grabbed people's attention, where I think most of the politicians didn't want to talk about, I don't know, just general things that are, you know, they thought people wanted to hear, but they didn't get to the really difficult issues. And he did, at least in name.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what they bring out, is that a lot of people, they were appealed to his charisma. And they even go through how his whole career has been fueled by controversy. That's kind of what he fuels off of. That's what he likes to work in. That's where he can gain an advantage over his opponents, because he knows how to work the crowd. I mean, he's been in the game for a long time. He knows how to use the media. He knows how to win over a crowd, how to work the crowd, what to say, when to say it. And you can see that. That's really what he did at the big rallies and to the country, is he spoke to what the people wanted to hear. And he was able to feed off their energy. And as you said, he said things no one else is willing to say. And they have a lot of great quotes from people, especially from Michigan, which was one of the battleground states there, where because Michigan had voted Democrat for so long, that they're going through a lot of personal examples of people talking after the election. And they said, like, look, President Obama promised us things he didn't deliver. I'm tired of one man said, he said, I'm tiring of surviving. I want to go on vacation. I want a better standard of living, and no one else is promising me that. And they had a really interesting statistic where in most states where in those states where the share of Chinese goods increased, so did the vote for Trump. So in American states, as more Chinese goods took over the economy, so did Trump's popularity. I think that's an interesting correlation there. And I think people saw that. They have some other statistics where since 1980 and even just from 2000 to 2013, so President Bush and President Obama, the middle class in America has fallen. Their earnings are down. Savings are down. They've really taken the biggest hit in America. Well, in other places like Asia, the working class is becoming much more wealthy.
Right. And, you know, you can put yourself in the position of, let's say, a coal miner in West Virginia who's losing his job and he's not knowing how he's going to support his family, and you've got politicians at their fancy dinners talking about global warming and, you know, transgender rights and things. They're just not relevant to that person. He's concerned about his bottom line, and you can see where they'd be much more interested in a businessman that's, yeah, he's won some, he's lost some, but at least he's done something. And, you know, they talk sometimes about the difference between what they would call book smarts and street smarts. And not to say that Donald Trump's not a smart guy book-wise. He probably is that way as well. But he has a lot of street smarts, experience. He's been there. And you get these, I would call them kind of like smart aleck reporters that aren't much over 30, if they're even that. And they think they know everything about everything, and they got schooled by a guy who's been there and done that. And they got taught a lesson, I think. I don't know that they learned it, but I think they got taught something. They should have been.
Mr. Trump could easily classify as an elite all these people who are talking about climate change and these things that really no one cares about. Most of the elites in this country are completely out of touch with the everyday person. Yet here's Mr. Trump making almost $1 billion a year, and it seems like he's in touch completely with the everyday working man, and that's what people were attracted to. It wasn't that they're all racist, that the fact that Chinese goods are overtaking the economy means they hate the Chinese. Ridiculous logical fallacies like that.
Yeah, people want to survive, and not just survive, but hopefully build a little bit of success into their lives. And, you know, you want that. You want, when you look to a leader, you want to see somebody that's successful. You don't want to see somebody like, say, the current administration that just tells you how you're evil and you need to give everything back to everybody that you stole. And, you know, you can barely pay the mortgage and you're getting blamed for stealing something from somebody else. You're like, I don't even know what you're getting into here. You know, I want to see the economy do well, and I want to see the U.S. do well. And that's what I think most people wanted, and that's why they voted that way.
Yeah, and it's interesting at the beginning, they contrast Trump's penthouse there in Trump Tower. And when he's sitting down for an interview, they're at a huge marble table. He has diamond cufflinks, all these things. But he represents working class America. And there's a huge irony there because he, I mean, as Grant said, he is an elite. He's a wealthy man. But he was able to understand the working class more than any other politician in America. And that's an achievement to his right. But there is a kind of an irony there, I guess. But he capitalized on that. And that's why he was so successful. And as some other stories that were being told there, with all the reports of President Obama creating jobs and all that, they talked to some people in Michigan and in the Rust Belt in that area of the U.S. And they said, like, well, yeah, McDonald's is getting more jobs, but I can't work at McDonald's because I can't pay car payments, mortgage. That's not the kind of jobs we need. We need like the manufacturing jobs, the jobs where you can live off of it and provide for your family. And so there's just a big disconnect between what the politicians in Washington say in press conferences to look good and what's actually happening on the ground. And there's a huge disconnect between the Democrats and the people who supported them for 8 years and the promises they didn't fulfill.
It's kind of interesting. If you look at this current administration, the one that's probably coming in, it's like good cop, bad cop for people. You've got the current administration telling you that, you know, you should feel guilty about how bad you are. And the new administration is coming in saying you should feel great. And, you know, and speaking to that self-worth that people have. You don't have a lot of self-worth if you're trying to provide for people and you have a part-time job and you can't make ends meet. If you have an actual career, you've got self-worth. And it's interesting because it's kind of that good cop, bad cop. How about something in the middle, though? Or maybe above it all, and we've got something better than that, which is Great Again, which is our version of that. Well, not our version, but it's the book, the same title. It's at thetrumpet.com. Where it's not looking to either side, it's not looking to a physical leader to come in. But you can see how people are getting kind of pushed one way and then back the other. But nobody's talking about, what about like God, though? What about the commandments? What about where America came from? Like, no one's addressing that, and that's the missing component in all of this.
There's definitely the two extremes there where people, you're either all bad and all racist, or you're all good and you're all great people, and you're all working hard, like Mr. Trump always says. People are a mixture of both, and they're mostly bad. So that's what we need to realize. And we can't just rely on a politician from one side and then the other side every 4 or 8 years. There has to be something better than that.
Yeah, because people want hope, but eventually you run out if things just don't improve. So pretty interesting, though, Person of the Year. That's always, I guess, a great honor for most people. I've never won it. I don't think that I've been in the running lately, but who knows? It's not over yet.
There's always 2017.
It's always 2017. I want to be in the top five most influential media and person of the year. Is that too much to ask?
Well, if it means much to you, I think more highly of you than Megyn Kelly and Donald Trump.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, one of the brilliant strokes of Donald Trump's campaign was those ugly hats that said, you know, great again or make America great. Like the ugliest hats you've ever seen. But those are the type of hats that like farmers wear and truck, you know, industrial. It's like from the 1980s. And I was like, wow, that's an ugly hat. But, you know, it kind of worked.
Down to the hats, he's relating to the working class.
Yeah, he is. Cause
something that small.
Right, because he's wearing a, you know, what I don't know how much his suit costs. A fair bit, let's say a couple $1,000. But his hat's, you know, one of those, like, dollar hats.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of worked. I thought it was actually kind of smart in that way. We have one other story here about Trump. This is from The Telegraph that you have, Grant. Donald Trump's belligerence could drive China and Russia into each other's arms, isolating the United States. Something to pay attention to.
That's right. A lot of people were horrified that Mr. Trump last Friday would call the Taiwanese leader. That obviously would ruffle a lot of feathers of the Chinese. So people are wondering what his foreign policy is going to be like, specifically regarding places like Russia and China. It seems like on the one hand, he's going to be really strict toward China, you know, possibly even imposing 45% tariffs on goods that come in from China. And also, even just in another way, he's kind of made some other threats toward them militarily even. But when it comes to Russia, he has been quite favorable. And that's quite a dichotomy there. But this article points out that historically, we have wanted to have a triangle between America, China, and Russia, where America is actually closer to the other two than China and Russia are to each other. But right now, what we're doing is we're kind of extracting ourselves from the region, and we're being nice to Russia, but they don't think they have to really treat us with as much respect if we're going to just be as nice as we are. At the same time, China is alienated by some of the things we're doing to them. And so they can go right together. And that prophetically is a horrifying thing, Russia and China getting together, because then they're unstoppable.
Yeah, we have a really good book on that, Russia and China and prophecy. It goes into a lot of, especially in the first part, a lot of the recent news stories about how these nations are getting back together, Russia, China, a lot of those nations there in Asia, Russia and China being the top two, I suppose. And yeah, it is interesting to see just how we're kind of stuck. In the U.S., we're kind of in like this trap where right now, you know, we like Donald Trump said, and I think he's right, there's a lot of trade deals that don't favor us. But if you come out too strongly against them and say, you know, and hurt them economically, then they go look for somebody else. And you're on the outs. And then they're against you in another way. So there's not a lot of good options there. It would be a tough position to be in to make decisions about what do you do in relation to Russia and China if you're the U.S. right now.
Yeah,
it is interesting because just like you mentioned, everything has changed in the last 10 years where China's actually become a lot more powerful and self-sufficient than they used to be. And the whole reason America had relations with China was because when Nixon opened the open door to China is because China and Russia had a disagreement. And so Nixon stepped in there and tried to separate the two. And that's what Grant mentioned there earlier. But where that division between China and Russia isn't there anymore. So what do we do? And I think the only thing you can do is use your power to tell them that you're uniting and you're working together, but you have to realize there's going to be a opposing force if you do anything against any other nations in that area. And I think America's been too scared to use their power as they should in that area of the world. But also we've been trying to talk to China and to placate them into being our ally. And that's not going to happen with a communist nation that has a museum in Beijing called the War of American Aggression. They have a whole museum in Beijing documenting their victory over America in the Korean War. When you have something like that, they're not going to be allies with them. And you have to realize that when push comes to shove, you have to be able to face them in the world. And I think that's the tipping point we're at, is either we become allies or we become enemies. We have to be strong enough to face them.
Good luck, right? Yeah. That's a huge block over there when you start talking about the population, the potential economy, when they start working together. That's a massive thing.
Right. That booklet you mentioned, Russia and China in Prophecy, talks about how throughout those two nations' history, they vacillated between cooperation and conflict. Really, they've never been consistently close, because if they ever were, they would be completely unstoppable. And yet events always played out to where they couldn't quite align maybe the way they would want to. There's a great quote in here. It looks like it disappeared from me, but oh yeah, here it is. There appears to be no alternative for these great powers. Both share common philosophies economically, politically, and militarily, and both have a common enemy in the West. That's an important part to consider. The way that China for decades counterbalanced Russia's presence in Asia benefited the United States geopolitically, but that equation is changing as Russia and China march toward a military alliance. That's what we see happening right now, and this writer of that other article I was talking about is alarmed that maybe a Trump presidency could drive those two closer together.
It's straight out of biblical prophecy, for those that have paid attention to that and to what Herbert Armstrong said for years. So there's a lot of good write-ups about that, Russia and China prophecy. He was right as well. All free at thetrumpet.com. Donald Trump's belligerence could drive China and Russia into each other's arms, isolating the United States. Really interesting write-up there. One last note for today. If you were thinking to yourself, I wish I could pay more for Starbucks coffee, you're in luck. They're going to be opening some new stores where you can spend $10 for a cup of coffee.
Thrilling and overjoyed.
Oh, brother.
Well, when I get my bonus for being in the top 30 media, influential media people in the world, I'll have to stop there first.
I'm gonna raise the ante there. I'm gonna up the ante. I'm gonna open a place called Cup of Gold Coffee. And it's literally a cup of liquid gold. $1 million. Delicious. And it will kill you immediately. But, you know.
Well, I think that's how most people will feel if they do spend $1 million on coffee.
Unbelievable. $10. What is it coming to? Pretty interesting. Those are some of the headlines and some of the things going on today in the world. Thanks for spending some time with us here on Trumpet Radio Live. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondo, have a great rest of your day. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.
Live streaming at kpcg.fm. Trumpet Radio.